Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, August the 10th, 2017. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time with our partners, MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcast service you desire. Hope everybody's doing well. Midweek version of the show. We've been doing a few of these because obviously the 2017 season hasn't gone exactly as planned. And if you're tuning in and expecting me to break down the Jay Bruce trade that came down late last night for a minor league Class A reliever, you're wrong. Although we'll get to that. And I think there's going to be a few other waiver deals. There's, as of the recording of this podcast, there's some talk of the Yankees and Neil Walker. And maybe there being some interest there. Obviously, the controversy with the Jay Bruce trade is that you're hearing that the Mets possibly could have gotten a little bit bigger return if they had traded Bruce to the Yankees, but they would have had to pick up some salary. So the whole Mets finances thing, and I know Sandy Alderson will speak about that later today. But I'm not here to talk about any of that because I wanted to do something different. I wanted to shake it up. It's been a rough season for the Mets fans. I think it's been kind of a Groundhog Day theme. We complain about the pitching, the regressing of the pitching, Collins, the disappointments, the injuries. You know, who are we going to trade? You know, who's being traded? You know, what kind of return? It really isn't what at this time of the year you want to be talking about, especially 2 years removed from a World Series appearance. So I was able to go out over the last couple of weeks, and I was able to think about, well, what's coming up? What kind of benchmark, maybe get a former Met, and a couple of things came together. One, I realized that on Monday when the Mets play the Yankees in a four-game set, two at Yankee Stadium, two at Citi Field, that it's 20 years since the first Subway Series. So that's somewhat of a milestone. Now, whether or not the papers and the radio will pick up on that, I don't know. I mean, the Yankees are in a race for a division, a race for a wild card, so their vision and what they're looking to do is a lot bigger than nostalgia. The Mets, they're going nowhere. The Mets are actually looking to trade and purge and maybe take a look at some of who is left and whether or not they can be pieces for a 2018 reloaded team. Maybe nostalgia is not in the offering for either team, but for here and for what we do, it is. And with 20 years of the Subway Series, I'm happy to have in a couple of minutes Dave Malicki, a former Mets pitcher, pitched the first Subway Series game, a 6-0 shutout probably one of the best games he pitched of his career. And Dave and I connected, and he's going to be joining us, and he's going to be talking a little bit about that experience. And maybe we'll catch up about his career. And I know it was a short Mets career, but he played for the Tigers. He pitched in the playoffs with the Astros. And I think every ball player, no matter how long they spent time in New York or spent time on the field, has some interesting perspective, has some interesting things to say. And back in the old NYBD days, we used to do these things with Mets and Yankees all the time. And they were fun, and we got a little bit away from it on this. A couple of reasons. First, it's becoming a lot harder to grab these guys, and they're also doing a lot more of these. Other outlets are doing more of these, so it's not all that different than it used to be when independent sites like myself were pretty much grabbing up and doing this kind of stuff. And I guess it's kind of follow the leader type of things with the big guys following what some of the independents had done over many, many years. But you could still get some really good spots, some good pieces from these former players. And for those in the audience that are young and you think about it, if you're about 20 years old, you probably don't have any recollection of the Subway Series, much less of the 1997 Mets, a team that after about 7 years was starting to turn the corner. It was Bobby Valentine's first year as manager. They were now 5 years removed from the stench of the worst team money could buy. And I think it's really that, to borrow that old Pat Riley term, the innocent climb. That was the first innocent climb for the Mets as an organization, although there were many players that weren't part of the 99 and then ultimately 2000 National League Championship team. There was the beginnings here, especially in this Subway Series, of what was going to be every year a heated rivalry between the Mets and the Yankees, and what culminated in that actual Subway Series in 2000, where the Mets were fighting for respectability. They were fighting, they never quite are going to get out of the shadow of what the Yankees accomplished. The Yankees, what they accomplished in the 90s, was basically turn a generation of fans into Yankees fans. The Mets are still to this day suffering from it, and they may never recover from it. But the Mets of 97 were letting everybody know in that three-game set that they lost two out of three in three very close games, including one later in the series that went down, and I believe the Mets lost an extra innings on that one. So that was the first of what was a yearly, and then became instead of three a year, six a year in 1999. And you had the Clemens incident and Piazza. And for those, like I said, that are young, you just don't know how intense those games were. And they always were a barometer, at least for the Mets, of where they were. Can they step up? Can they play on the big stage? And it was almost a warm-up for bigger games to come. Because in the standings, it was no different than any other game. You could be playing the Phillies or the Pirates. It was one game, but it took on a larger meaning. And I think it prepared them for the intensity of games with the Braves and the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks and other teams in that season in 99 when they went down to game 163 and they had to beat the Reds in Cincinnati at Riverfront Stadium. I think it prepared them. It was almost like a warm-up, and it put them in the spotlight. And it put the players in a situation where they were expected to come up big. And the fans treated it as such, and the newspapers treated it as such. I always remember the day after that particular 97 game being in a local library in Brooklyn, and the security guard was a Yankees fan. And one of the patrons there was a veteran. I don't know whether he was in the Army, Navy, I can't remember right now, but they were arguing, and the Army vet was like, hey, you know, Steinbrenner is going to fire Torrey over this. And the Yankee, you know, security guard was a Yankees fan, was like, hey, you know, this is just one game of many. And for the Yankees, it really was. It was always one game. They always downplayed it. Torrey did a good job of that because Steinbrenner took it very seriously. They had more to lose. Their vision was always, well, we have a bigger vision. We have a world's championship focus. And, they didn't want to get off that focus. They didn't want to get away from what the Yankees at that time, and rightfully so, they were about winning championships. And not that the Mets weren't trying to win and compete and ultimately win a title, because that's what the 99-2000 seasons were about, and to a lesser extent 2001 when things started to go south and fall apart. But they were also looking to get respectable and to get into the conversation. So the Yankees were already in the conversation. They already had a world championship the year before. They already had their innocent climb. They already kind of burst onto the scene. Now the Mets, a year later, are trying to come in and steal market share here, for lack of a better word. You know, steal some of the spotlight or whatever's out there. And, you know, Yankee fans aren't going to like it. They they liked the world in 1996 where they were the world's championship. The Mets were irrelevant, and everything was about them. And when the Mets came in, I know it's corny to say market share, but that's what it was. It was trying to garner a piece of the market. And it was fun, and it was intense. And over the years, I think it's gotten played out. I think we've seen different cycles. I think we've seen different iterations of the Mets and Yankees. We've seen both teams go into downward spirals where the games literally meant nothing for both or one of the teams. And to a certain degree, it got played out. Now, this young Yankees team that's up and coming, and we'll see what they're all about, and maybe if the Mets could reload, and it would have been really fun next week if the Mets were in it, because I think it would have been an opportunity for both teams to possibly showcase the best of what each of them can be. But and if you took a poll at the beginning of the year, you would have thought it was the Mets that would be relevant right now, and the Yankees maybe not so much, and it's been the opposite. And now the Mets have a chance to play spoiler, maybe trade some of their veterans across town. They could just walk right across to the clubhouse. And maybe next year, as the Yankees continue to build and grow, and maybe as the Mets try to figure out what's going to happen now, maybe there'll be better days ahead, and maybe there could be a rekindling of the Subway Series. And I like the four games, 2-2. I think the six gets played out, three might not be enough. And I think I said this years ago, and I'm glad, and they've done it, and they've done some where the 3-3, and they've gone to, and I think it's a lot to do with the schedule, and they go to the 4-1 week. But I just like the 4-1 week, 2-2, home and home. You almost make it a week of Subway Series baseball. It's like a festivity. And if both teams are in it and things are intense, and that's the thing. I don't think there's the same hatred of each other. I know the Yankees were bothered by the Mets back in the 90s, but there was a general hatred of the Mets for the Yankees. Valentine, I think, played a lot into that. How Joe Torre was treated as almost a saint, as a deity. That was annoying. The media played it up. I mean, the media did a good job of building the narrative back then as well. So you don't see that as much anymore. And, hopefully we'll get Dave on in a minute here, but hopefully it'll hearken to another time. For those that lived it, bring back some good memories. For those that haven't, maybe you could get an idea of how things were, maybe learn a little bit about a former Met that may only be known for one game, but at the end of the day, one game or not, he is in the Pantheon. He's in that Mets Hall of Fame. He will always be remembered, and he'll have a piece of not only New York history and Mets history, but baseball history as the first Subway Series game winner, shutout, complete game, whatever have you. So anyway, let's take a quick break. Let's go back and hear a memory from that 1997 Subway Series game. And when we return, Dave Malicki, former Mets pitcher, will look back at that game and will remember the 97 Mets and maybe look back at some of the highlights of his career. We'll be back right after this.
He got it. He locked him up with a curveball. And Dave Malicki, in his 48th Major League start, has pitched a complete game shutout for the first time in his Major League career. What a performance.
We're back. You guys heard the audio clip 20 years ago, and it's now 20 years since the first Subway Series. And joining us, he pitched in that first game. He pitched a complete game shutout. Complete game, something you don't see too much of today, and it's Dave Malicki. Dave, Mike Silva here in New York. Pleasure to have you on. I know that you obviously have talked about this a billion times. We'll do it 1,000,000,001. Are you tired of it? I mean, your career was a lot more than one game, but obviously here in New York, we like talking about that game.
Yeah, no, I'll never get tired of talking about it, I guess, right? It is amazing. I feel like I did a lot of some neat things, but this was definitely up there, and it's a great memory I have, and it was something special. It was, special to do it, something like that in New York. And I think doing, the first game is, I think, why everybody really remembers it. I think if it happens, today, it's still something really cool, don't get me wrong, but I think the fact that it was the first game that the two teams met is what makes it so special.
If you look back, and I know it's a long time ago, your starters, obviously, they planned them.
It is a long time ago.
It's amazing, because I remember watching that game live, and I'm 40 years old, Dave, and I'm like, geez, where where has the time gone by? But when you were looking at the schedule as the week came on, were you expecting that? I mean, that was a big deal back in, and maybe today it's not. No one's really talking about next week's Subway Series, but maybe today, you know, that at that point, you know, everybody was circling it on the calendar. Were you as well?
Yeah, for sure. I remember when the schedule came out, I was really, really hoping I could at least just pitch in the series because, you know, you're, you know, 5-6 man rotation. You never know really how it's going to fall. And as it got closer, I was like, well, it's going to be close. Like, I'm either going to pitch the game, you know, the night before or that first game. And I was just hoping we wouldn't have a rain out or anything like that. And, you know, then Bobby stuck with me and it was just a game I had looked forward to, and it's something I really, really wanted to do. And it was, you know, something special, and it was, you know, obviously something I'll never forget.
That team was actually the first year that the Mets had, you know, some respectability in a while. It was almost the innocent climb. Right. To use that old Pat Riley term from the 99 and 2000 team. I know that you left a year later, but that team wasn't expected to do well. And I think before you even get to that series, what do you remember about that group? Because a lot of Mets fans actually remember that group fondly because there was low expectations. It was a fun team. You were in the wild card race. That series was one of the highlights, but there were so many other memories. And if you go, I don't know if you've looked into any of your old numbers, game scores, things like that. It wasn't even the best game you pitched. The best game you pitched that year, according to the game score, was a game you lost 1-0 to the Phillies later in the year. So it's pretty amazing. There was
right.
a lot of other memories I'm thinking that year as well.
Yeah, no, I did. I had some other good games for sure. I think it was just the game, you know, that game. You know, for us, we were, you know, the Yankees at the time. You know, we're a powerhouse. I think they won the World Series that, you know, the past year. Obviously, they're a great team. They're the old team still together. For me, playing in old Yankee Stadium was something really cool as well, just the history. You know, I love the history of baseball and all that. And, you know, that was something special as well. But, you know, we had a great group of guys. You know, I think one thing that helped me out a ton was, you know, Todd Hundley. We just worked really well together. And that day, for whatever reason, I was just really calm, and it was a great feeling. But I knew I was going to do well. It's amazing how you can kind of I don't know what the right word is, but it was just eerily calm, and it was just so much fun. It was just a fun night. But yeah, Todd was great, and yeah, we had Gilkey and you know, Olerud, and I mean, we had so many, you know, great veterans. And then pitching wise, you know, John Franco is, you know, still one of the guys I've always looked up to. And you know, you got guys on the back end that can close a game. So I just figured if I could just go, you know, 6-7 innings and turn it over to the bullpen at the time, it was great. And the big thing for me was getting the 3 runs early in that first inning. And that made it it took a lot of pressure off. So if I did make a mistake, it wasn't going to cost us a game. And I think that really helped a lot.
You actually pitched the postseason game later in your career, but was that as intense of a game that you remember? I think it was later on with Houston you pitched in a postseason game, but
yeah,
the crowd and what have you.
It was for sure. You know, I think it was nuts. It was like a postseason game. I never made it to the World Series, like you said, but I didn't pitch in the postseason with Houston, and it was a different feeling. I think it was more excitement in the interleague game, to tell you the truth. Also, I think it's because we were playing in Yankee Stadium, and then so many Mets fans came to Yankee Stadium, which I thought was really cool. And to hear them, you know, do the "Let's Go Mets" chant in Yankee Stadium was pretty awesome. It was fun, but it was loud. It was, you know, it was a perfect night. It was just a great day. It really was for me.
I have with me Dave Malicki, former Mets pitcher. You guys remember him, 6-0 shutout back in 1997, first interleague game. You actually danced in and out of trouble throughout that game. If you think back, is there a moment, a pitch, an inning, a sequence that you remember where, you know, things could have maybe turned, and or maybe there's just one memory specific? I know, you know, the game itself, but is there one thing that when that game is brought up, maybe a moment that you think back of, big moment that you got out of trouble, or just something that always comes to your mind?
Oh boy. Well, the thing that always comes to my mind was just obviously just, you know, striking out G Jeter to end the game. That was like, that was a thrill. But that, you know, the game was in hand at that point, obviously, and I had the bullpen warming up and everything was going. But that's the big memory I have. Some other ones, just some other strikeouts. In the middle parts of the game, I give up a bunch of hits. I felt like I could, you know, the big guys I was getting out, and then not the little guys, you don't want to say that, but the back end of the order, I had trouble with those guys. And, that's where I got into trouble. I feel like I gave up a hit almost every inning. I was like, holy cow. But it was just, I felt like I could get out of anything, which was really and a good feeling. And, I think to start the game, I think Jeter got a hit, reached on an error on second, and then I got the next three guys out. I didn't let them advance. And that gave me a ton of confidence. Just that first inning really kind of set the tone for me. And then again, if I threw a bad pitch, Todd got all over me. I remember one, I hung a slider to Cecil Fielder and hit it about, 7 miles foul left. And Todd came out, got on me and said, we got to buckle up, do this. And so the next pitch, I threw the same thing again and just located better and struck him out. And it was times like that where I did get a little lucky at times, I think, because I think that when I made a mistake, they hit it. But, fortunately that one, he pulled it foul. But now there are so many different, memories I can go through. It feels like it just happened, tell you the truth. That's one game I really, really remember. I think what also brings it up is just, continually talking about it for sure. But the thing that amazes me the most too is, I still get letters and cards and stuff. I mean, at least once or twice a week from New York fans still want me to sign stuff, which I think is amazing that they can, that it still meant so much to so many people.
Yeah, that is true. The city was abuzz about that. Playing for Bobby V, I've met Bobby V. He's a pretty, big personality. He's a controversial personality.
Yeah.
That was always a wild time. Talk a little bit, because the fans always are interested in hearing how was it playing for Bobby Valentine, because obviously he's a polarizing guy, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Obviously good and bad. I think he was, at the time for that team, I think he was the right manager. He's been around the game forever and knows his baseball. I think sometimes he tries to do different things, which people, question for sure, different types of plays and different things. But yet it seems to work out a lot of the time. And he was a big personality. And, but I think he was absolutely the right manager for the time with that team. He could keep, the young guys, he kept those guys loose and would give them confidence. And the older guys, he would, let them lead, but yet kind of let them lead in the right direction, if that makes sense. So it was never a dull moment. Let's just put it that way.
Now for you, that was some thought, a breakout game, and you had a decent Mets career. Your numbers, if you look at they go to advanced metrics, you were very solid above league average pitcher. You started to struggle after that. What happened for you in New York? Because you went on to Detroit, and you actually pitched pretty well in '99 in a hitter's league, in a hitter's ballpark. That must have been an interesting experience. But what happened to you in New York? What really, if you look back, was there anything that you could point to where maybe it didn't go exactly as you wanted?
I feel like, I feel like I left with unfinished business. I mean, I loved my time in New York. I really did. It was a great place to be and live and the fans. I think what happened, who knows what happens, but, I feel like I pitched really, really well for about 3.5 years. And then the last year I started struggling a little bit. And I think you if you lose a little bit, if you lose, focus, you lose your location, anything. I mean, big league hitters are hard to get out. They make you pay. And I think I just started pressing a little bit. And then I tried to do more than you really need to do, if that makes sense. Like, instead of just hitting my spots and hitting, what you need to do, I tried to, throw it harder. And every time you throw it harder, location gets off, and that's when you get hurt. Location is much better than speed. And I think that was the big thing. It was a big growing point for me, because that was really the first time I kind of struggled a little bit. And that's you know, you kind of have to go through growing pains a little bit, and it's hard to do that sometimes at the major league level.
I'm laughing as you say location's better than speed. Billy Wagner, I'm sure you remember him,
Yeah. Sent
a tweet out yesterday.
I guess
he's doing some baseball training. And I'm laughing because some kid, I guess, was going to velocity training. And he was tweeting about, well, what is that?
Okay.
You know, what is velocity training? And
you
think about you pitching late into that game that we talked about, and you're pitching close to 190, 200 innings. You were a young guy. I don't know if you're involved at all in the game with your kids or in any capacity, but it's changed so much, I'm guessing. Even from just 20 years ago, you're a modern-day player, in my opinion, but it doesn't feel like it anymore, you know,
right,
with the way things have transpired.
It really doesn't. I you know, once the game ended for me, I definitely stepped away for a little bit and then coached some high school baseball. And then my boys got a little bit older, I just started coaching their teams. But now my boys are freshmen and sophomores in high school, which I can't believe. So I'm helping coach the high school team here again. And then I absolutely love it. It's coaching high school baseball is for me, is so much fun and rewarding. But you're right. Every kid I teach or help coach wants to throw harder or wants to throw, you know, first thing is a curveball at, you know, 7 years old. And I wouldn't teach it until they got, you know, old enough and strong enough. I think there's so much more. But, you know, I try and bring up guys like, you know, Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine, you know, those guys did not throw hard. But, man, they got everybody out. They won Cy Youngs. You know, it's not about the speed. But I think it's also hard, too. I happened to go to an Indians game last week with the kids, and, you know, they got the radar gun up on the, you know, scoreboard, obviously, and how hard everybody is throwing is just amazing to me. It's everybody's a lot bigger, stronger, and it is. I mean, I think that, you know, everyone throws really hard. But, you know, my personal belief is, you know, if you can hit that spot on the outside corner, it doesn't really matter how hard you throw. If you can move your pitches in and out and change speeds, if you talk to hitters, changing speeds and location is the hardest thing to hit. If you throw, you know, 100 miles an hour and it's down the middle, they're going to hit it. And so I'm trying to teach guys to hit spots and have a go-to pitch. You know, if you can throw a pitch down and away to a right-handed hitter, that's you know, you could live there all day. There's not a whole lot you can do with that pitch. So. Although some of these guys are getting so strong now, they hit it to right field, hit it out over there. But it has changed a lot, and it's amazing, you know. But I think every generation says that. You know, I remember when I was pitching, everyone says, you know, the older guys were saying that, you know, it's changed since they were there. So, you know, I think it evolves for sure. But I think good pitching beats good hitting any day.
You know, I'm looking at your numbers as you're talking. That Detroit season in '99, 14 wins. Not a good team, Tiger Stadium, where I guess the outfield's like up against your back out there. That was pretty impressive. It seems like you learned a little bit, you know, in an offensive era for a variety of reasons. You know, that was a very solid year. What do you remember about your time over there in Detroit?
Again, I did. I enjoyed it. It was a shock because I was actually at the time when the year started, I was in L.A. With the Dodgers, and you know, the weather's beautiful and everything's great. And then ended up getting, you know, I got the call that I got traded, and we just got finished playing the Diamondbacks, and they told me I just got traded to Detroit. And I was like, holy crap, you know, it's going to be cold. It turned out to be great. And especially pitching in that stadium. There was so much history. That's what I loved about it. But you know, any pop fly to right field went out. I don't know if you remember that old stadium or not. Yeah, the right field fence was short, and there was actually an overhang from the upper deck over the field. And it was a great stadium to watch a game in, but it wasn't that great of a stadium to pitch in, unless you hit it to center field. The dimensions were really, really goofy, and that center field was, I mean, it was like 420, I think, or 430. It was something huge out to center, but then right field was, you know, just a regular pop fly would go out. But I think that actually helped. And there I really got a lot of help with Brad Ausmus. You know, he caught me there and in Houston. And, you know, Brad and Todd, I think, were two great catchers that I had. I was really lucky to be able to have those guys help me out. I learned a lot from them as well. It's amazing how much a catcher helps. And, you know, I learned a lot about pitching, a lot about myself, especially in Detroit. Those were the years I just started – I guess, kind of coming into my own, really, at times. And it was just a, it was a good time for me. I learned a lot about pitching in those types of stadiums.
And you're almost, if the Mets don't trade for you, you're almost part of that Cleveland team. That, you know, things, it's amazing how careers could go. You stay with the Indians, good team. They always needed pitching. They score a billion runs. They actually just did a special on, I don't know if you saw it, MLB Network, about that team with John Hart and some of your former teammates there.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how close you could have been to being with that team. And you come to the Mets, which was a transitional period. So it's amazing how things turn out, huh?
Well, for sure. Yeah. You know, coming up with Cleveland was, it was great. I had that chance in 92, and they actually called me up in September. And that's when that team was just starting to turn around with Tomy and Kenny Lofton and all those guys and Baerga. And, you know, I get to play with them, and I came up with them. And, yeah, I think I really was going to be a part of it. And then I hurt my shoulder. I tore my labrum my last start with the Indians. And, you know, speaking of that, I pitched the second-to-last game in the old stadium. So I pitched in the old stadium in Cleveland, if you remember that place. So there was like 70,000 people. I think it was a football stadium. So that was a great time. And then – yeah, I got hurt and came back and pitched well, but then it took a little bit longer from that labrum. And then fortunately, you know, I got, traded over to New York, and it was for me. Yeah. Looking back, it would have been great to go through that and be with those guys. But, I think when you're in a playoff run, you know, with playoff teams going to the World Series, you know, the young guys, you know, there's not really a chance to make a mistake or grow or do anything like that. And I think New York did give me that opportunity. So, you know, I think everything does happen for a reason. Sure, it would have been great to be a part of that team and to go through that. But, I wouldn't trade for my time in New York. It was awesome.
You never thought about what would be if they had made you a reliever, especially the way relievers were coming in and making money and throwing bullets out of the bullpen? Because you did throw pretty well out of the bullpen with the Mets.
Yeah, no, I did. My personality was funny. Is I'm more of a guy that likes routine, and I like to know. I'm a schedule type of guy. Like I like to know when I'm going to pitch, what I was doing, when I was coming to the ballpark, what I had to do that day. And when I was in the bullpen, it was a lot harder for me, just mentally. I liked it in that I would only go, a couple innings, but I never knew which innings. And at the end of my career, when I was in Houston, I was a reliever for, about a month, but I only would come in for about an inning. And actually that's when I threw the hardest my whole life was that, cause I could come in and just let it go and not have to worry about trying to get guys out two or three times. I could just throw everything I had at them one time and I'd never see him again through the lineup. That's what's, you know, so different about starting, starting and relieving, starting, I'm going to see a guy, three times, maybe four times, and I got to get him out. Where, as a reliever, they only see me one time, and I can throw everything at him. But personally for me, I just like starting a lot more, a lot more. It fit my personality better, and it was just what I like to do. But yeah, looking back, gosh, it was awful when it was over. I wish I could still be doing it for sure.
Couple of things before I let you go. So, who was the one hitter that wore you out? Maybe it may not be an obvious guy. Was there someone you think back who wore you out that when they got up, you're like, I just can't get this guy out? You'd be surprised. I get answers for that. It's not always the obvious answers for sure.
Yeah. There was a few guys, but the one that always comes to mind is Barry Bonds. The guy was just such a good hitter, and he would just make you, if you made a mistake, it was not a good ending. I felt like I always had trouble with him. And the other one that you're going to laugh at this one, but who I still think was the best hitter was Tony Gwynn. And I didn't have that much trouble with him because all he would do is throw a two seamer down the middle and he'd get himself out because there's no way you're going to pitch to get him out. He was such a good hitter. He was amazing. But I think those two kind of stick out. I had a little bit more trouble with the left-handed guys in my mind. I don't know if statistics show that or not, but I felt like against the righties, I could throw my slider and curveball and my two-seamer in on them, and I just had a little bit easier time with them. I felt more confident. I guess I shouldn't say easier. Just I felt more confident going against those guys. But, yeah, Barry Bonds kind of always sticks out in my mind.
What was your favorite ballpark to pitch in, and what was your least favorite one?
Oh, I get asked that all the time. Looking back,
people love
my
people
favorite,
love that
gosh,
stuff.
Any,
though.
I know they do. They do. Yeah, I was the favorite one to pitch would have to be Yankee Stadium because that has some good memories, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I Wrigley was fun to pitch in because just again the history. You know, old Tiger Stadium is as hard as it was. That was pretty cool to pitch in that too. Just because you're in the dugouts and you realize, you know, who actually played in that stadium and sat in the same seat that I was sitting in. That, you know, that stuff was pretty cool. Least favorite, I never really liked going to Montreal. It was just always kind of sterile in that dome. It was just the crowds weren't really that big, and I don't feel like it was a baseball town. But I honestly, all the towns, and actually Philly's a tough time to pitch in too because the fans there, man, they're rough. They can get on you pretty bad. But if you remember, like Philly, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, all the stadiums were the same. Those were those generic, you know, football / you know, baseball stadiums, and so they were just kind of, you know, okay to pitch in. But again, you're pitching in the big leagues; it didn't really matter. But some of the newer stadiums, you know, were fun to play in. I think those were fun for different reasons, for sure.
So you'll probably get other calls over the next week. You'll probably at some point the clip is going to be played. Have you watched the game with your kids? I know your kids are younger. I don't, you know, do they look back at any games? Do you enjoy looking back at your career? They're playing ball now, or are you more like, hey, that was my career. You know, let's focus on the now. Like, I think it'll be interesting because
right.
It's always fun when you talk to ball players. The kids look back and say, that's what you look like. That's how you played. You know, it's a. You know, for any kid, you know, looking back
at
how their parents looked many, many years ago.
Yeah, it's funny to say that. It's different because my kids have never, you know, I have pictures of me with my boys, you know, on the field, but they were, you know, 2 years old. They don't remember anything. So, you know, it's funny. Like, they know what I did, and they know that I pitched. But I think now that, you know, it's weird because they see me at home all the time or, you know, just coaching baseball or stuff. I think it's different to me. I'm just their dad. I'm not a pitcher, you know, right. You know, I'm not a player. I think now it's starting to they think they realize it more and more, especially if we're at, you know, games and then all their buddies can, you know, pick up a cell phone now and pull up every stat of my career, pull up highlight tapes. And it's pretty funny. So then change things a little bit. So they're like, wow, you really actually did do something, you know? But I think they've watched that game. I haven't watched it in it's probably been, you know, 15 years or something. I really haven't watched it, but I feel like I see it all the time in my head. I remember it so vividly. I think I can kind of almost go inning by inning, really. I just, for whatever reason, that game really does stand out for me. So, but no, I think they've watched some games with my parents and stuff like that, but we really have never really sat down and done that. I feel like, you know, it was such, you know, that you're, like you're saying, that was my time. And I'm sure they've seen some stuff, but I've never really pushed baseball on them. I want them to make their own choices and do what they want to do. And so my older one he's actually a really pretty good baseball player. But he plays baseball and hockey, and the younger one plays. He gave up baseball. That one was tough on me, but he gave up baseball for lacrosse, and he's a hockey player as well. So, you know, I let them do what they want to do and find what makes them happy. You know, for me, baseball was my life. That's what I wanted to do, and it afforded me so many great things. And, you know, that was my dream, and I want them to have, you know, their own dream. I don't push it on them. So, you know, hopefully they enjoy it, and, you know, I know my older one does, and like I said, he's pretty good, and so, you know, who knows? Let's see what happens.
Are you a baseball fan now, or because you played, you kind of, you know, focused on other things? Most players tell me they really don't watch the game after they, you know, play the game because you lived it for so long.
Yeah, I tell people that. I felt bad because I don't watch it that much anymore. I started watching it again now a little bit with my older one. Like I said, we went to an Indians game the other day, but, you know, the guys I played with and my old roommates are all, you know, GMs and coaches and stuff like that. So, you know, DePoto's a GM and Doug Henry, he's a pitching coach, and, you know, Mike Sarbaugh is my third base coach over at Indians now. And So that makes it fun for me. Yeah, I didn't watch it for a while. I'm starting to again. I tell people I watched, 200 baseball games a year for 20 years. It's like, I've seen a lot of baseball, Major League Baseball. So, it's fun. That's why I can get my fix now by just going to the high school games and that. I thought I would like to look into, maybe coaching in college or something like that, but I think that would be, that'd take up too much time for my family. I think that's why high school is just such a great, great fit for me right now. And it's fun. We've got a good program over here and it's been enjoyable.
Well, listen, you've been generous with your time. I appreciate it. The fans here definitely do remember that. They don't get tired of this stuff, especially Mets fans.
You know
that playing here, nostalgia is a big part. They may not have a lot of world championships, but nostalgia is. And look, you go down in the Pantheon, Dave. Doesn't matter if it's one game or 10 games or 100 games. Maybe it wasn't Piazza, but you're in that Mets Hall of Fame for that game.
Yeah.
So it's got to feel good. And we appreciate you spending a few minutes here. And let's catch up again. All righty?
Absolutely, anytime. I love talking baseball. So, like you said, the New York fans were awesome. Loved them. So I appreciate it.
And that's Dave Malicki, and pretty fun. I mean, again, I think we you got a different take of a different type of ball player, a ball player that bounced around a little bit, gave you some honest answers about his career in New York and his memories of that particular game. And there's only so much you could talk about one game, but I thought his thoughts about Hundley and maybe a couple of the moments where things could have went south, I thought it was interesting. At least I tried to give you guys maybe a little breather from the nonsense that has been the 2017 season, and hopefully that it did what it was intended to do. And maybe we'll do more as the season goes on, and we'll try to catch up with other ex-Mets, and maybe they'll have some more cool stories and look back at some seasons before we get back and roll up our sleeves and look at how we're going to talk about and analyze and what are the Mets going to do to improve and make sure that 2018, that at the beginning of August, mid-August, we're not looking back at games from 20 years ago. Because as fun as it can be, this is something that you'd rather do during the hot stove, those cold winter nights where you're really jonesing for baseball and there's no trades and there's no winter meetings and there's really nothing going on, and you like to look back at these kind of things to warm you up and get you ready for whatever, how many days before spring training. So now's not really the time, but it is relevant. It is history 20 years ago. So a programming note, I know you guys typically look for this on Sunday, and I know the last couple of weeks with the trade deadline, Sunday night baseball, what have you, we've been on midweeks or early weeks, and I'm going to try to get back to the Sunday schedule with what's going on. We're going to really play it more where there's news. I'm not going to go on every Sunday to rant and rave about how bad the Mets are and how annoying this season has been. We'll definitely get into the Jay Bruce trade and maybe learn a little bit more about what happened. And I'm trying to see what we can get done. So look for the next podcast. If not Sunday late, early Monday morning, maybe we'll get a Yankees perspective. Maybe we'll do some kind of like looking across town. I'm thinking about a couple of things, but I wanted to put this one out before the weekend, give you something to chew on since it's been a little over a week since our last podcast. So that's a little programming note. Hope you enjoyed it. Of course, we're out of time, and as always, I want to thank the good folks at MetsMemorizedOnline.com for supporting the show and being great business partners. Of course, send me a tweet, Mike Silva, at Mike Silva Media. I want to thank Dave Malicki being generous with his time here and spending some time with us. Of course, you can check out the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcast and service you desire. If you want me to be on one, let me know. I'll try to get on there. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the weekend. I will talk to you next week. Head for the park and greet the men. Hot dogs, green grass, all out of shade. Guaranteed to have a heck of a day. Because the Mets are really rocking that ball. Hitting those home runs over the wall. All right. Jersey. Brooklyn, Queens.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.